Taylor.
And I'm Amber.
And this is
Waking Up the Witch.
We're your neighborhood witches. Each week, we talk about all things witchy and connect with other humans in a storytelling format about navigating life on this floating rock.
We're two curious ladies trying to understand the human experience. But while we do that, we think it's important to honor the people that lived here before us and honor the cultures and traditions that we're being inspired by.
This podcast is about waking up the witch, which means we are learning and growing every day. That being said, we are always open to feedback on how we can do better.
The views and opinions of our guests don't necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Waking Up the Witch.
Now, let's go, ghouls!
Hey, Amber.
Hi, Taylor.
What's up?
Just on a little bit of a high from our really great conversation today. How are you?
Good.
That was so good. I woke up. I got here and my energy was so fucking low and still low. It's day two of my period, but that was so energizing.
Feeling to have vibe.
That conversation and to learn a little bit more about who we are and understand each other a little bit more is really cool. This is good convo. Today's guest is an amazing person that we got connected with through
one of my clients.
Okay. I was like, I don't remember now that I'm saying that. And she specializes in human design. And, you know, if you've been listening and following along, we've been waiting for today for so long. And right now this is a two-parter, but we've scheduled her for part three as well. So today, what you're listening to, this is her story. And then next week, we will have the deep dive into some human design stuff. And it's really never ending. There's so much to learn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm about to go to Home Depot after this, if anybody cares. And we... What?
Just making me laugh.
Should I not add that part?
No, you can add whatever you want. I just think it's funny. You asked why you were funny. I don't have the answer, but I can certainly laugh at you.
I'm going to send her my chart. She'll tell me why I'm funny.
Yeah. I guess enjoy the episode. She's amazing. And go follow her and book a session with her because she is a great teacher of human design.
Yeah. Enjoy.
Enjoy. You can start by closing your eyes if that feels good for you and grounding your feet on the floor. And we'll take three deep grounding breaths together, breathing in. And exhale. Another deep breath in. And release. One last big breath in, holding at the top. Breathe in. And hold. And release. We're calling in our higher selves to be here today for this call, as well as all the higher selves of those who will listen to this episode. Asking for support and guidance from our spiritual guides and guardians and our ancestors. Please create a loving, protective container for us to share today, helping us all to feel safe and vulnerable. And please allow for whatever is meant to come through today to come through. Let it be for the highest good of all concerned. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you.
It's a vibe today.
I'm excited about today.
we're going to be talking death and rebirth. I got my snake earrings on, so hell, I feel like... This.
Perfect. Okay, guys. Okay,
I'm excited
to it.
So excited for our guest today. Please introduce yourself. Tell us who you are and what you do.
Yeah, thanks for having me. My name is Allison Forsett, and I do many things. In my business, I work a lot with human design and offer mentoring to people who are kind of moving into the experiment of living by the guidance of their own bodies. So yeah, working a lot with human design, among other things.
Amazing.
I love the way you said that.
Looking for someone to share their magic design with us since we started, really. So we're so happy you're here.
Yeah, thank you so much. I used to be a teacher as well. So
okay.
I'll bring a little bit of that in today too.
Great. Teach us. Yes.
Perfect combo.
So if you could just take us to the beginning of your life and kind of tell us how you grew up and how you got to where you are today, we would love that.
Yeah, so I grew up in a pretty rural area. I live in Wisconsin still. That's where I've been my whole life. My dad actually grew up on the land that I grew up on. His father, my grandfather, either gave or sold, I'm not sure, plots of land to all of my dad and his siblings as they got married. So kind of like an old school rural Midwestern setup where there was like a street in the middle of nowhere that was mostly occupied by my family members.
I love that. So, wow. That's the goal, really.
I did live in a house before that, but I was younger than two when we moved into the house. So, and my dad built it. My dad's a construction worker, and my mom was a stay-at-home mom. So definitely like rural working class Wisconsin origins. Because my dad grew up on the same land, he was so familiar with it in a way that I think it's really cool now, but I didn't when I was growing up.
Of course.
That he could like hunt and fish and forage and farm like so many of the vegetables and so much of the food that I ate growing up was from that land. And yeah, I just thought so it was cool. Weird that we were eating venison and stuff. but damn, like what a gift to be growing up on gardened canned veggies and fresh fish and venison and foraged morels from the woods
to have such a variety of foods too that I think most people don't really realize what they are until we're older too, so that's awesome.
I have a very vivid memory of I was 5 years old and my dad came home from, it was hunting season, so he was going hunting every day. And he came home on a four-wheeler with like a deer slung over the back of the four-wheeler. Mm-hmm. And I just broke down sobbing.
I'm not eating that.
Yeah, exactly. So I did go vegetarian in middle school. I was vegan for 10 years. And I think just being exposed to where food actually comes from so early in life was really a formative experience for me.
Yeah,
in
a lot such of a ways. Gift.
Yeah, so that's kind of where I was born and grew up. My parents built a 3-bedroom house for themselves and their 2 daughters. And in the process of building the house, found out they were pregnant with my younger sister.
Wow.
So my younger sister was born when I was 22 months old, not even 2 years old.
Wow.
In the midst of this very big transformation of house being built and all of that. So I'm the middle child of 3 girls.
So walk us through kind of like what it was like, I guess, growing up with your sisters. How was your high school experience? What are the little things that made you interested in understanding yourself and exploring your own like spirituality or design or any of that?
Yeah. Yeah, so I learned something recently about birth order. And I'm not super well informed on this, but I will share what I've learned, which is that these traits that people associate with birth order and like the youngest and eldest and middle kid, they are like researched and studied, but the count sort of restarts after 5 years. And so if you have a sibling who is more than 5 years older or younger than you, it kind of like restarts. So my older sister is over 5 years older than me. And in this birth order structure, that would make her have traits of an only child and would make me the eldest.
So interesting. That makes so much sense, though.
It does. Yeah, because I mean, 5 years is a long time to grow up like that much of your life without other siblings.
Totally.
It's a big amount of time. So yeah, I will say my older sister felt like we felt pretty distant from one another. And then my younger sister and I were so close growing up, fighting really close as well, not just not just close, but we were very, very tight-knit kind of together all the time. But it was always expected of me to have like to know better and to be the eldest, even though there wasn't that much of an age gap. Sometimes it felt like I was older when it was convenient for them, and we were the same age when it was convenient for them.
Ooh, yes. We just interviewed my sister yesterday, and we are also 22 months apart. I resonate so much with that.
Yeah, are you the younger?
I'm the oldest.
Okay. Yeah, so you get
and the true oldest. Like, all the babies were born pretty back-to-back. I wonder, actually, with my brother and my sister, they might be like exactly 5 years apart. Now that I think about that, now that you've brought that to my foresight.
So that's interesting. I had no idea, but it certainly resonates in some ways. So I was a really good, quote unquote, good student in that I had good grades and I got my work done, and was like, you know, they would give me the advanced reading projects and the like talented and gifted testing and all that stuff, which kind of baffled my parents, I think, for a lot of my life. They were like, where is this coming from? neither one of us is like this. And my older sister struggled endlessly in school. And a lot of my memories of her are her getting like screamed at about homework and stuff. And so sometimes I wonder if I was a good student or if I was afraid of what would happen if I wanted to go.
True.
But yeah, I had really good grades, did really well on like the ACT and stuff. I was accepted to the University of Wisconsin-Madison, which is a pretty prestigious public university in the US. So yeah, that's where I went to school. I was quite rebellious as well. So I was like, I felt like if I was getting good grades, my parents couldn't yell at me and that I could do whatever I wanted in my free time.
So true. There is privilege there.
I was like strategically rebellious. And I think a lot of that came from my parents' own substance use. They drank really heavily through most of my childhood. And so I think as early as like 12 or 13, I was drinking on the weekends with friends. And I felt like I felt so responsible. I felt like I was doing it the responsible way, you know, 'cause I was still getting all my shit done.
I also think just like small town Midwest, like that's kind of just what happens. It's like
I think in Wisconsin in particular, I had really kind of unlimited access to alcohol. My parents were gone all the time. Cabinets weren't locked or anything.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Same.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely feel like I grew out of my drinking phase pretty early. Like it was a 12 to 20 thing. And before I was even of legal drinking age, I was like, that's old news. I'm kind of over that now.
That's pretty lucky, though, when your body could really process through all that junk easily.
Hopefully yeah. That didn't
have maybe not your brain so yeah. much, but your brain yeah. looks to be pretty good to us.
Yeah. So I think, you know, I was pretty focused on getting out of my situation. And so kind of my sole focus on academics was what a lot of us were sold of this generation. Like if you get into a good college, you'll get a good job and then you can do whatever you want.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
And I don't know if that's entirely true for most of us anymore, but that's kind of like the story that I was sold.
The system was not built for us.
Yeah. neither of my parents went to college. So I was a first generation college student, first in my family. And I navigated a lot of that transition on my own, like touring colleges and stuff. My parents didn't know how to do that. They didn't know what to do. I was navigating a lot of things on my own that I think most people do with really heavy supervision and support from their parents, and kind of just like jumping into the unknown because everyone else was jumping there and it seemed to be known, but to me it was completely novel. And so when I was 18, I moved from my parents' house in the middle of nowhere into University of Wisconsin-Madison does have a campus, but it's kind of just like scattered downtown. So it's like right in the heart of downtown Madison. There's university buildings. There's not like a closed campus like most colleges have. So straight That's from the farm right to downtown Madison when I was 18. And I moved into a dorm with a lot of people from Chicago and the East Coast and the West Coast, who were far more wealthy than I was. Most of them had parents with really prestigious jobs. I have this very vivid memory of my first day in my dorm with my roommate. I was at my laptop paying my tuition bill, and my roommate's dad was helping her move in, and he asked what I was doing, and he was like, "Oh, don't your parents do that?" And it was like day one, I knew that my journey was so different than everyone else's. And I feel I had so much shame about that. Felt like my own flaw.
How were you paying for school?
So I imagine you two may have gone through this process as well with the FAFSA, so like the financial aid federal calculations. And they basically take all the information from your parents' income and they create what they think is like the estimated amount that your parents can afford to pay per year. And based on that, they'll offer a financial aid package that covers the rest. And my family's estimated contribution was $0. That's how much the federal government thought that they could afford to contribute.
Same.
So, yeah. So the FAFSA kind of covered the rest. It's certainly not like you get a bunch of grants. It's like you're going to be in debt for the rest of your life. With these loans. But there were Pell grants offered to me for being a student of financial need. And then a bunch of loans and then a work study program as well of me working on campus at the dining hall. So,
yeah, a lot different than your schoolmates.
I think there was one person on my dorm floor who was also paying his own way through. But yeah, I felt very, very different.
It's so crazy because I think like, you are probably more like so many more people in our country than the people you were actually going to school with. And honestly, there's so many of us too that like just could not afford it or couldn't make it happen or didn't have guidance at all. And so like, I don't know what to do. So fuck it. I'm going to go just get a job somewhere. Like what's school for me? But yeah, it's crazy to feel like it's probably almost isolating in a way, and to carry that shame when you truly were like working the hardest or one of the hardest working people to make it happen for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I think there are culture differences associated with socioeconomic status that are much harder to see, especially at the age of 18.
Yeah.
That there were certain settings that I was really uncomfortable in that other people were comfortable in. And I thought I was just like weird and like I should already be able to do this. Like, why is this hard for me? It's not hard for everyone else. That I realize now is like, you know, I grew up in a family where like a professional setting didn't really exist. With working in construction, for example. And so, yeah, there were just a lot of things. Like, we talk about culture shock with studying abroad, which certainly happened to me when I moved to Spain at the age of 19.
Wow.
But the culture shock of moving from home to college was huge.
Yeah.
Well, I think when you're going to a different country, you expect to be confused and like out of place. But when you're just going to the city, you don't really think much of it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
If you're in the same state still.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So you finished college and became a teacher, you said?
I did, yeah. So, yeah, freshman year, you're supposed to, like, claim a major. And
that's so crazy too, because 18-year-olds know what they want to do for the rest of their life.
I went in undecided, and then semester two I was like, I gotta claim a major, because if I don't, I'm not gonna graduate in 4 years, and I can't afford
it.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so I had always been interested in teaching. When I was in high school, one of my credits was a volunteer credit where I walked to the middle school and I would tutor the middle schoolers in one of the Spanish classes. And I did that because I really loved Spanish and I liked the classroom setting, and it was just fascinating to me how I learned language really fascinated me.
Yeah.
Came very naturally to me. I took French in middle school, actually. But yeah, it was just, my brain is just a sponge for languages and the kind of like the system nature of a language and the way that everything kind of works together. So yeah, I loved that. I took I switched from French to Spanish in high school, and I took Spanish all throughout. I also saved up money my junior year to go, maybe it was my senior year, on the high school Spanish trip. So I was like a cashier at a grocery store, and I saved my minimum wage dollars up to take my first ever trip really anywhere. I had driven from Wisconsin to Illinois with friends or for like auctions with my parents, but I had never flown on a plane, had never been out of the Midwest. And I saved up money to go to Costa Rica with my Spanish class. Which was amazing. And I was able to like understand, we stayed with a little family, each of us stayed with a family, and I was able to understand people in some way, which just like blew my mind. That
so cool.
Yeah.
You could go to Costa Rica and understand what people are saying about dinner. So yeah, that was so incredible to me. And then I had a Spanish teacher my freshman and senior years of high school who really recognized that my brain worked differently than other students with language. And it was like, she would teach me one thing and I would be like, oh, so that means I could say this, 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 or this, and all these different tenses. And she's like,
put it all together.
Yeah. And
my brain did not work like that.
No, mine either.
It's wild to think back. And now having, you know, where the story is going is that I was in these spaces where I felt expanded when I was learning languages, where I felt at ease learning languages, and also where I felt recognized. Like, my teacher like took the time to give me not necessarily extra work, but like to expand where I needed to expand. Mm-hmm. And I remember she also let me grade people's papers because I was bored. Like I would finish my work and then be ready to do something else. And that led me to when I was in college trying to claim a major. Mm-hmm. Why don't I just teach Spanish because of all of these other pieces that kind of led me there.
That's so, awesome. Also, how was Spain?
Spain was probably one of the hardest 4 months. Mm. That's maybe a little too dramatic, but it was really challenging for me. So basically what happened is I claimed my major my freshman year, and the Spanish education program was 2 full years. And in order to get into the program, you had to study abroad for a full semester.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, fuck it, I'm studying abroad my sophomore year.
Yes.
There's a reason people don't do that. And so I was 19. I turned 20 when I was in Spain. And I remember, like, I was with my roommates and had my suitcase packed, and I was about to leave, and I'm like, I really don't want to do this. Like, I don't want to go to Spain. And it was just a lot, and I was just nervous. By that point, I was struggling pretty regularly with mental health and, like, not being able to get out of bed and just, like, persistent overwhelm. And it had certainly happened in middle school and high school as well, but I think when you're that young, it's just, like, you just have to keep going. Like, what else is there to do but just keep going? And so that definitely followed me into Spain of, like, in hindsight, it was such an expansive experience for me. And at the time, I felt so overwhelmed, and I spent so many days in my host family's bedroom watching Breaking Bad in the dark. Like, I watched all of Breaking Bad in that 4 month span.
Wow. Well, in like 4 months in any new place, no matter what, like, it takes minimum that for you to start to even get comfortable in general, but then throw in studying and probably still recovering from culture shock from the year before and having so much weight on your shoulders to, like, this is what I have to do to not do the life that I've been raised in, to have success and also to be stimulated because your brain works that way. And then you add in just 18, 19 year old hormones and trying to fit in and figure out life. And it's a lot already on people's shoulders at that time. And, you know, I totally resonate with being, like, when I first moved to Arizona, like, the first 4 months, I laid in the bed. I had insomnia. I stayed up all night, and I just watched Friends on repeat. And I, like, I joke that, like, they were my friends when I didn't have friends, you know? And it's really lonely, so I can't imagine, like, you have this mission, this purpose, you're studying abroad in a beautiful country that you probably had some excitement to go visit, but yet, like, depression and anxiety and overwhelm is just getting the best of you, where you can't really fully experience it in the way that maybe you wanted to or envisioned it.
Yeah, and it was this many-layered experience where I could tell I wasn't doing well, and I felt guilty for not doing well because I was in this beautiful place. And it was another situation where I was in a program with a whole bunch of other people studying abroad from the Midwest, and I would say 95% of them, it was a pretty small group, but, like, nearly every one of them had funding to be able to go to a different country every single weekend.
Wow.
Yeah. And, like, do a trip and have, like, a fun experience.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is my financial aid money being used in Spain. I don't have, like, extra funding available to me, really. So it was, like, another thing of me feeling different or, like, on the outs in some way. In addition to being totally uprooted from anything that I had ever known.
Absolutely.
And so there were so many bright spots in that experience. And also I look back and know that I was really struggling and kind of like in crisis pretty consistently and still doing all the homework and walking to class. Yeah. And I did 2 short trips on top of that. It was supposed to be 3, but I forgot my passport for one of them.
Dang it.
Yeah, so, you know, I can look back now and I'm like, that was incredible. My Spanish got so much better and I learned so much about travel and things about myself. And there were so many like mini successes along the way. I also applied for my teaching program from Spain. I was Skyping with someone who was submitting my packet for me, in Wisconsin, because that was the only way to do it at the time. But yeah, definitely, yeah, expansive and really challenging.
So then, did you became a Spanish teacher?
I did, yes. So I finished off my my 2-year teaching program after I got home from Spain, and yeah, I became a Spanish teacher.
And then you are not doing that anymore.
I am not. That is correct.
Yeah. So, part of the system we talked about.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's like so many, you know, this obviously could be like a novel. Everyone's life could be a full novel in itself.
Totally.
Yeah. There were so many experiences in between like point A and point B. But my last semester of college, I was student teaching in high school, and my cooperating teacher was really supportive, like very intimidating, honestly, but like really supportive. And I grew a lot as an educator in that last semester, working with her and teaching her students. And she was extremely pregnant at that time. And so the plan was that she was going to go on maternity leave the beginning of the following school year, and I would take over for her for 6 weeks for her leave time. And then I would be kind of free to figure out what my next step was. I wasn't really ready. I felt like I wasn't ready to like take on a full-time teaching job.
Yeah.
And what happened is that was all lined up and ready to go. And then the middle of August, school started the first week of September, the middle of August, a different teacher from the department decided to leave her position and took on a position somewhere else where she was like mentoring part-time, which was the dream of hers. And so suddenly there was a full-time position open in the school where I was already comfortable and had already been working with the people for 4 months and was already planning to be there. And I remember being nervous, but feeling like it would be stupid to not try, to at least apply, right?
Yeah.
But the thing is, when I try at something, like I made this beautiful portfolio. I put together this amazing portfolio and like bought my first pencil skirt and was like so ready for my interview. And I already knew some of the students, of course. And yeah, they offered me the job.
Wow.
And I took it. So yeah, that was my entry into full-time teaching and how I got a job at the school where I had already been student teaching for a while, which was amazing. It was a huge leap for me from feeling like I don't know what I want to do. I'm going to just like buy myself some time to my name's on the classroom door.
Amazing. Wow. Opportunity presented itself.
Yeah. Yeah.
And was it teaching Spanish too? Was that
Yep.
That's same so department. Cool. Wow. Same
subject.
What are the odds of that?
It, like a really, it's a really good school too. So, I stayed there for 4 more years after that. Yeah, I think there was a little bit of a challenging dynamic that I really only gained awareness of in hindsight, which was that this teacher who had been my cooperating teacher and my, like, not necessarily my boss, but who mm-hmm. I was answering to when I was a student teacher,
mm-hmm.
suddenly became my colleague.
Mm-hmm.
So the playing field was really level at that time, but it didn't feel like it.
Because mm-hmm. That relationship had already been fostered.
Exactly. And yeah. like I said, she was an incredible teacher, but she was like a little intimidating, very yeah. like fixed sort of worldview. So yeah, that I think created some challenge in just in terms of me feeling like I had full agency over my classroom and over the choices I made as a teacher. She was a little bit more like strict, maybe mm-hmm. is what we would call it in terms of like her classroom management and just the way that she saw the role of the student and the teacher mm-hmm. and like the power dynamic there. I didn't really necessarily agree with the way that she worked, but I felt like she was doing it the right way because she had more experience and I was yeah. a new teacher.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think that, I don't know how many years ago that was, but I think that mindset is kind of shifting like all over. Is just because you have more experience doesn't mean it's right or better or anything like that. I think that especially because there's like new ways of thinking of everything.
And new ways especially of learning.
Yeah. mm-hmm. The internet and stuff. I would just want to keep us on time. If you could kind of pull us around to like current and how you got into like why you decided that teaching wasn't for you and how you got into what you're doing now.
Yeah. Yeah. I can share kind of how that transition looked.
Perfect.
It was, yeah, I think we're going to get a little heavy, just a heads up.
That's what we love. We're here to hold that.
yeah.
Take your time.
Yeah, so my first official year teaching, my first official year teaching, my first official year teaching, there was another teacher who had become the instructional coach at the school after many years of teaching there. And she had also gotten her RYT to teach yoga. And she felt really strongly about like teacher wellness and bringing forth yoga mm. as a tool for teachers to help understand themselves better and also just to like regulate in the face of demands of teaching as a profession. And she started offering yoga classes in the school building in one of the classrooms wow. right after our contract hours ended. Cool. And it was so hard to like pass that up. It was yeah. literally like right across the hall from my classroom.
No excuse. You don't have to go anywhere.
Exactly.
That's so cool.
So I started yoga then and there. I did my first ever yoga class after school, after a full day of teaching, on the floor of the classroom across the hall. And I remember laying there in Shavasana, just like squirming and feeling like every bone in my body was like on concrete. And I just mm-hmm. couldn't get comfortable and couldn't settle. And I kept doing that every week with her. For many years,
mm-hmm.
Just like once a week, being able to kind of like make time for this thing. I think she charged $10 a class. And it was this like tiny little window into how burnt out and dysregulated mm-hmm. I was and how disconnected I had been for so many years from like true presence in yeah. my body and true awareness of like how my body was speaking to me mm. in these little micro moments. And I would get little glimpses in these yoga classes. And so the first summer after that, I joined a yoga studio and I was a teacher, so I wasn't working for a couple months every year. And I would go and do yoga in a public class every single day.
Wow.
And then run errands and like go home.
Wow.
And it was this yearly cycle of June, I'm like so disconnected from myself that I like wouldn't even recognize myself if I met me on the street.
Mm-hmm.
To daily practice and like coming out a little bit by August, and then like the dread would set in of it's time to go back to my classroom, and I'm like going to have to go back in there, and I'm going to be back in the school building every day, and like the cycle is going to start over.
Mm-hmm.
And that happened for a couple of summers. And my last year teaching, it was mid-August, and we were in this like a auditorium for the orientation for teachers that we did every year. And I just remember sitting there, and I was like, oh my God, I can't breathe. Like, I literally can't breathe right now. And that had happened throughout my teaching. I was working with a mentor that the school provided, and I was having panic attacks pretty regularly during the school day. And she would always, like, we would go up the stairs and then around the school and then down the stairs and up the stairs, and just, like, we would walk every single time. And in hindsight, I'm like, that is such a genius way to help someone channel that fight or flight energy and just like come back into the body and like, okay, we had the panic attack and now we're going to go teach some Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
But that happened every week when I was working with a mentor.
Wow.
And so my last year teaching, that first day of school, just teachers in the auditorium, I just couldn't breathe, and I started crying, and I ran out of the auditorium crying, and I went to my classroom, and I was just trying to catch my breath. And the mentor I had been working with in my first 2 years got in a car accident. And so I was switched to a different mentor, and she came and found me in my classroom that day when I was crying. And I told her, I'm like, I'm having so many doubts about teaching. I don't know if I want to be here. It feels like every single year I find myself and then I lose myself again in the stress of the school year. And this is despite I was waking up at 5 o'clock every day to do yoga because I had found that one thing that helped. And so I kept doing it. So I was able to give to my students, just like filling my cup a tiny bit every day.
Yeah.
And I told her what was going on, and she listened, and we kept going. And I went back into the school year, and I did finish off that school year. But in December of that school year, so this was December 2018. I went through a really traumatic breakup. I had been seeing someone for 5 years, and the relationship ended very suddenly and traumatically. And I was in this like kind of exploratory mode. I was like wondering what life could be, but I wanted to keep my foot in teaching so that I felt stable. And like I could make a decision if I wanted to, but I wanted to keep what I had, which life doesn't always give us that option, unfortunately.
Yeah.
December was the breakup. And in January or February, this person who worked at the school in a different department, different type of job, I saw him walk past my classroom. And then he stopped and walked backwards and like popped his head into my door of my classroom. And he was like, hey, you do yoga, right? I was like, yeah, I do yoga. And he was like, would you ever want to go to a yoga class with me? And I was like, in this moment, I'm processing like how recent the breakup was and like, do I really want this? And I was like, it's a yoga class. It's fine. Like, just say yes. Why not?
It's not just yoga.
And so we went to a yoga class. I soon found out that it was not just a yoga class. It was a 7 a.m. intermediate power flow, 90-minute intermediate power flow.
Oh, my God.
It was not the, like, gentle hatha I had been doing. It was, like, a true vinyasa fast class. And, Saturday morning at 7 a.m. So I went to that and had like a wonderful conversation with this person. And we definitely kept talking in the months after that. So from January through April, it was this really intense winter and school kept getting canceled, like dead of winter. Wow. In Wisconsin, there were like a lot of snow days happening. And every time there was a snow day, I would spend the whole day with this person because he was also off work because he also mm-hmm. worked at the school. And I started picking him up to take him to work with me. So we would ride together every day and would like check in every morning. There was a day that I texted him in the morning just to check in like we did every morning. And he didn't reply. And I thought that was really weird, but he had been really tired and I thought maybe he just overslept. And mm-hmm. so I drove to his house anyway and I like honked outside. And I was waiting and he didn't come out. And I was like, I'm sure he's just sleeping. Like his bedroom's in the basement anyway. He's probably just asleep. And I got to school. I had to leave his parking lot. So I like got to school, went about my day, like kept checking my phone. And one of his colleagues from the special education department, he worked with the kids that you would say, hey, did you do your homework? And they would be like, fuck you. Like mm-hmm. he worked with those kids.
Wow.
So one of his colleagues from that department came and asked if I had heard from him. And I was like, no, but like, I'm sure he's fine. And there was a day that same day, I was supervising a study hall and I got a phone call from the school that said, hey, I need to have someone cover your study hall because we need you in the office. And I was like, yeah. Oh, okay. And my assumption was that there was a student that had been coming to me a lot, like almost every single day for emotional support. And I assumed that she really needed help. Mm-hmm. And so I went to the office just assuming like to find the student. And they led me into the guidance counselor's office. And there was a social worker and a guidance counselor. Mm-hmm. And they led me into an office, just the two of them and me. And they put a blanket on my lap.
Oh my God.
And they said, hey, you've been spending a lot of time with this person, right? And I said, yes. And they said, well, he's dead.
Oh.
And I remember I said, no, he's not. And they said, yeah, he passed away last night. And I was like, no, I just saw him. I just saw him yesterday. He can't be dead. And I just couldn't believe it. But he had told me early on in our relationship that he was in recovery from substance use. And this is like, this had become a pattern in my life. You know, my parents are alcoholics, and I had dated someone in recovery when I was 20. When I came back from Spain, I dated someone in recovery who relapsed. And my traumatic breakup that December before also involved substance use. And yeah, so he was in recovery and he relapsed and overdosed. And
I'm so sorry.
He worked at the school that I worked at. And so like I would see him throughout the mm-hmm. day. He would like poke his head by my window. And after all that, I had to go back to the school.
Mm.
That same year, so he passed away in April. Right in between meeting him and losing him in March, I was notified by my principal that my department was contracting. It was getting smaller because there were fewer students wanting to take Spanish. And I was like, oh, okay. And he was like, yeah, and we've decided that we're going to offer you the part-time contract. And I was like, after 4 years wow. of working 60 hours a week, these people are offering me a part-time position that would not support me living at all. And
I don't even get insurance or anything at that point.
Nothing. It was like a 0.2 position. No. Like it was like one class a week. It was just absurd. And I kept asking why. Like I kept over and over and over again. Why am I being picked for this? Because there was someone on the team who was newer than me, and I just assumed it would go by seniority because it always had. And my principal just kept saying, I think that this other teacher is in a better place. Mm. And I was like, what does that mean? And if you can zoom back in my story to that day when my mentor found me crying in my classroom, and then zoom a little bit further back, that there was a teacher in the department who took a mentoring position, which is the reason I got hired at all. It was that same teacher. And the confidentiality that a mentor should have with their mentee was broken. She told the principal that I was having doubts about teaching and finagled her way back into having a part-time Spanish teaching position. It was a total betrayal of trust and just a complete betrayal. But I was so rocked at this point in my teaching that, like, I found out in March, and it wasn't until June that I was like, Wait a sec.
Holy
fuck
cow. No.
Because, there was a day that she, was like really apologetic and like tearful. She's like, I'm so sorry. Like, I broke your, and I was like, I didn't know what she was talking about. Like, I just didn't put two and two together. And I told her it was fine. And,
Oh,
I mean,
gosh.
When all is said and done, I didn't want to keep teaching there.
Right.
And it turned out how it was meant to.
The universe was helping you by removing any pieces that would try to hold you there.
Yeah. And I mean, I remember before that first traumatic breakup, I remember like a month before that, I was like, I wonder what a final straw would look like.
Yeah.
In this relationship. Wow. And to anyone out there, if you ever ask, you will be shown.
Yeah. So truly careful what you wish for, but hopefully ultimately for the good and the better for you.
I think so. I finished out the school year. I was pretty wrecked. I burned a lot of bridges in that last year in that team because I knew that someone had betrayed me, but I didn't know who it was. And I was in so much pain with the loss of my partner that I just, I definitely burned a lot of bridges. But finished out the school year, I took every Wednesday off because I had some paid time off available. And I was like, I can do 2 days at a time and then regroup and then 2 days and then a weekend. And that's how I carried out the rest of the school year.
Good for you.
And had some really beautiful goodbyes with students at the end of that school year. But I also actually had accepted a position at another school kind of in the area. Then I kept the contract until mid-July. But every time I thought about it, I felt sick to my stomach.
Yeah. That
I had to cancel the contract.
Definitely tells you something.
Paid the $1,000 contract breaking fee and whatever and felt so bad about it. But I just needed to get away from, I mean, everything that I knew got pulled out from underneath me.
Wow. And that was in
2018 through 2019. Yep.
Shit. What a time to flip your life upside down.
It's like you would assume that that was my Saturn return, but it absolutely was not. Like, it was way before that.
Wow. That's pretty wild. So what did you do next?
Next, I moved to live in a place. It was one of my high school friends. Her parents lived in the middle of nowhere and had an apartment above their garage. And I asked them just on a whim if it was available for the summer. And they let me live there for 2.5 months.
Mm-hmm.
I was like in this time of life where I was like, everything I knew is gone. Mm-hmm. So maybe I meant to like move across the country.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like applying for jobs all across the country. I was like, maybe I'll go to Arizona or like California or Texas. Like I was like, I could go anywhere and do anything right
mm-hmm.
now. But I was like, was a little delusional because I was so emotionally like still recovering from 4+++ years of burnout and that whole situation and loss.
Mm.
So I felt like I didn't know what was next, but I just wanted to be ready for it. So I was applying to jobs everywhere, and I found a place to live for a few months that I didn't have to sign a lease at because I thought, like, I'll be ready to pick up and go when I find something. But nothing was really working out. And so I ended up just finding a place to live in Madison and lived there for 2 years. I found a job that wasn't really quite the right fit. I asked for a raise from what they offered me, and they said, no, we can't do that. And I took the job anyway. And it was COVID started, like, right after that.
Yeah.
I worked there for 3 months, and then COVID started. I was really, like,
What the fuck in my life? Like, when can I catch a breath? Jesus.
Yeah, truly, like those months in between when I was like living in the country in this beautiful place, you'd think that would have been restful, but I was like applying for like 3 jobs every single day.
To figure out what's next. Like your whole life just changed.
Exactly.
You can't just sit there and breathe in the fresh air every day.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I found the job. I kind of like didn't quite think it was the right one, but nothing else was really showing up, and I felt capable to do the job at least.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like it would provide enough money for me to pay my rent at the time. So yeah, I took that, worked there for 3 months in person, switched to virtual, which was such a gift, seriously, for me. And it was like all I wanted by then was to be able to work from home and like have slightly less rush around my mornings. And so working from home was amazing, but the team that I was working for, you know, everyone responds to stress differently, and some people really like tighten up in response to stress. And that is definitely the way that this company's president worked. He had us tracking our tasks, like all of our work time, in 0.1-hour increments, which is every 6 minutes.
Whoa.
And so I just felt so like, I felt like there was no trust and like no autonomy and no like real value for what work can be other than like a series of tasks.
Yeah.
And this is going from like, I had my own classroom. I made all my curriculum from scratch myself. I never used a textbook. No one ever asked me what I was doing. Like I just did everything on my own, totally independently, to this place of, like no trust. And so, there was someone who had just started working there, and she met with me. This was, the month that George Floyd was killed. And the company had no internal or external response to the murder. And this person who had just started working there like a month before that, she met with me one-on-one and she said, I'm going to quit and we need to get you out of here. And she told me about a website called Jobs That Help. And that's where I found the job that I'm currently working in now, which is this remote, highly autonomous job that combines mental health and also teaching. I run a continuing education program for therapists. So it brings together these things that I'm passionate about with healing and mental health, and draws upon a lot of skills that I already had and already have. And I didn't even know that a job like that could have existed. So I certainly hope to move more fully into my business, but this job has given me enough wiggle room to be able to do that, to have a business at all, which is something that I always wanted, and to kind of take some baby steps toward establishing my business. And I did a few rounds of a course while working, and
Awesome.
Yeah.
And what is your business? Tell us.
Yeah. So I would say the way that my business started was really focused on this certain aspect of human design that we might talk about today, but it's honestly a pretty like advanced, deeper layer of human design. But it's all about the four transformations is what it's called. And so like there's a certain part of human design that speaks to us about how our body is best nourished and the from the inside and also from the outside. So talking about food and digestion, but also talking about environment and what types of spaces nourish us from the outside. And it also speaks to our psychology. It's called rave psychology, like the inner workings of the mind, which includes not only how we take things in and like the lens through which we see the world, but also how our mind conceptualizes things once we have taken them in. So it's kind of this like four piece thing that talks about our physical and mental psychological health. So I started a course on that. It was an 8-week course, and I ran four rounds that all filled up and was really, really fun. I've also been offering readings, of course, on top of that. But yeah, that course was kind of like what really gave my business like standing, I guess, and made me feel like I had a business other than just offering some readings. So yeah, one-on-one readings and then that course. I'm currently leading a program called Heretic Haven with a friend of mine, also inspired by human design. There's a certain part of called Profile, and one of the profiles is called The Heretic.
Amazing.
Which feels very appropriate for this witchy podcast.
Yeah. So we've done it again. We've gone over time with a guest because we just couldn't stop talking and enjoying their company. So this is our ending to your episode with Allison Forseth. And we're just going to pull a couple cards.
But come back next week because we deep dive with her on quite a lot of things about human design, but really the knowledge is never ending. It is a big, giant, beautiful well of magic. So we're also going to have a third episode with her soon.
Yes.
So excited. So we're just going to pull you a card here to leave you and end this beautiful episode from this new amazing deck by Rebecca Campbell. It is called the Ancient Stones Oracle. You know that we love Rebecca Campbell here. And this new deck might be my personal favorite of hers.
Okay. This card says, be the mountain, slow and steady, foundations, patience.
So there is a beautiful giant mountain with a really high point, and it's above the clouds. The top portion, there's a beautiful woman just with her eyes closed looking down upon the mountain.
Mountains symbolize inner strength and solidity. We've long been captivated by mountains, perhaps because of their sheer size and scale. Many mountain ranges are visible from space, or because they represent wide, strong foundations, while also reaching ever skyward. Those who reach the summits of mountains find their way above the clouds and can see further than ever before, gaining new perspectives the higher they go. The thing about mountains is that without those strong, wide, solid foundations, the heights wouldn't be reached. To be the mountain card is a reminder to go slow and steady with your goals so that you can soar higher than ever before. to ensure that you have strong, steady foundations so you can reach to the heavens. It's a reminder that no matter how harsh the wind blows, nothing can knock you off center because you draw your strength from within. The shape of the mountain resembles a triangle, and the equilateral triangle is the strong shape, the strongest shape there is. No matter how much pressure you put on each of its sides, it cannot be broken, for it draws its strength from within.
Oh, I love that.
The speed of the soul and our will can cause us to push ourselves for longer than is sustainable. The ancient stones have been here since the beginning, and they're always urging us to slow down to the speed of the earth. The essence of this message here is to slow down so you can speed up. Ancient stone activation. I am not in a rush. It is safe for me to go slow and steady. I focus on my foundations and draw my strength from deep within.
Okay, I will slow down.
We'll try. I love that, though. Patience is really hard. But
it is, and like when I get an idea, I'm like, I have to do it now. Very much, and then it's that. Just like sometimes I just need to chill out and maybe not even think about what it is, but know that maybe that's in the future and I should just enjoy what's right now.
Do you feel like you're gonna like lose the momentum for the idea to make it happen at all if you don't do it right now?
Maybe sometimes, but other times I think I'm like, it's such a good idea, but if somebody else does this idea, then I can't do it. And then it's like, what if somebody's going to do what I'm going to do, or I miss this opportunity, or
I'm mostly like FOMO. I mean, you have really good ideas and you make really cool shit happen. So
yeah, but what if I've, like, told somebody about my idea and then they steal it?
Yeah. Hopefully they don't.
So don't.
No one's got the magic that you have and the ability to bring it to life.
Also, if you feel like you have to rush to do something and it gets got, then I just want that for you.
Well, I also think, too, like, something I think about in the work that either of us do is, like, there are other practitioners, there are other stylists, there are other curly hair specialists, there are other people who have crystal shops and witchy boutiques. However, the way that it's going to be birthed through you is going to be so different than anybody else that, like, there's room for all of us to exist in the way that we can bring our energy to any sort of project. So,
correct.
It's not really like someone's going to steal it, because it won't be how it is if you bring it to life.
Yeah.
But being slow and steady and like really giving it some full thought, and maybe slow and steady looks different for you than it does for anybody else too.
Yeah, I think I've gotten a lot better at like sitting in the moment and chilling out.
You make good things. Trust yourself.
You.
Be the mountain. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Thanks for being here with us. And we'll see you next week for more with Allison on Human Design.
Go make a homemade meal.
Drink a cup of tea.
Make funny faces at a baby.
Go dance in the rain if you get the opportunity to. But be careful of the lightning.
We love you.
Bye.
This episode has been produced by my husband, Curtis Burgess.
Make sure to follow us on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube at
Waking Up the Witch. And if you have any questions, comments, or concerns, please email us at wakingupthewitch@gmail.com.
And don't forget to head over to the link in our bio on Instagram for all the ways to connect with both Amber and Taylor. And go to moonbeeswellness.com for all your self-care and witchy needs.
We love you. Bye.
Bye. Ow.